Mari, long time no see.
I know. How have you been?
Great.
Yeah.
Working hard, but that's good.
Because the last time we saw you were like starting a new kind of project that was, right? I can't remember what it was exactly, but it was something big.
Yeah, like it took me, it was the whole quarantine. I was
Yeah.
just working, working, working. Which was good because I had nothing better to do. Yeah.
Yeah, I found that too with quarantine. It was very good
Yeah.
for my work. Yeah.
Exactly.
Good for that kind of work. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the it was a long project, but it's finished now, and now I have like a more lenient job,
Super.
so I can be here with you. Which I missed a lot.
Yeah, I'm so glad.
Yeah. How has it been without me? I know it's not the same, but
This has been like aching, like a deep ache. It's kind of like,
we're
I'm
pulling through.
sorry.
We're struggling along. We got a bit of stuff posted here and there.
Yeah, I'm going to read all that. Marco was talking to me about a new piece that you've been grooming, a story.
Yeah, it's good. We've gone back and forth of maybe three or four times with the author, and I think we finally got the final version. So it's
Great.
pretty nice.
How's it called?
It's called The Second, which I just want to state that is such a confusing name for like all my files, all the correspondence about it. Because you have to be like the second draft of the second or
Right. It
the
implies that there's a first.
yeah.
Hey there.
Hey.
Hey. You're free.
I'll drink in our tea, coffee, whatever.
Yeah, coffee.
Yeah. I'm with water.
Yeah.
What's up, Geoffrey? Long time no see.
Yeah. Been a weird year, though.
Yeah, exactly. That's an understatement.
I'm going to be traveling back to Ontario this weekend. Probably. Maybe. So, just to like add to more weirdness.
Where are
I
you
don't
now?
know that, but
Well, I'm in Quebec City with Jeffrey. Same city as Jeffrey, but my parents and I have talked and we think that I can like safely become part of their bubble. I mean, we're pretty sure I can get there. We're just not sure if I'll ever be able to come back.
Yeah, exactly.
How tight everything's getting, but we'll see. So.
They've been staying healthy though, and you're healthy.
Yeah, none of us have had any symptoms or ever tested positive for it or anything.
And you would
They're
be
not even
flying for a few.
driving too, so
Oh.
yeah. Without stops. I mean, my mom will be driving. I don't have a license, but yeah.
You'll have a capsule to transport the bubble, yeah, and kind of
Exactly.
merge with the bubble of your parents.
Yeah, but it's still. I mean, I still almost feel like I'll wake up on Friday and we'll all be like, nope, never mind. Like everything just feels like you don't know what tomorrow is gonna be.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it'd be pretty stressful to make like any kind of trip right now. I mean, unless you really just don't give an F.
I know a few people like that.
I just had an incident. One of my closest friends, who usually talks to me every single day, at her job, she had some people who were very careless, and even though she was very careful, and now her and her husband and her landlady all have COVID. And her
Jeez.
landlady's been put in a hospital, and she was calling me, and she was like just gasping for breath. And I thought, no. It's not, it's, I swear, people who always talk about it like it's a joke or it's no big deal. I'm like, you don't want to get it.
No.
It's
Wow.
horrible. So, yeah, that was
Yeah.
not so lot good news in the last couple of weeks, but you know, yeah, that's it's right now I'm not going anywhere.
No, I think you're
I'm
smart.
sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry for that. Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, it's, I think they're, it sounds to me like they might be improving and getting out of the woods finally. So that's good. But you know, you still worry because you just never know. And she said, it's like whack-a-mole. Like you get rid of one, you think you're done with one thing and then something else just pops up and it's, you know, it just is one thing after another. So, yeah. So moral of the story is try not to get COVID. It's pretty awful. You know, I just feel so bad for her because she just sounds so miserable. But on a happier note, I wanted to say, Mary, thank you so much for that good review. I don't think I got to actually tell you that to your in person. Yeah, my pleasure. Nice. I really liked it.
It's so fun to just like engage with the work in that way. So
yeah, no, I thought it was great. And I promoted it in as many, both things in as many places as I could. So
cool.
But thank you.
That's actually a great segue because that's kind of like what's been on my mind. We could talk about some specific pieces, but more I've been thinking about like the submission process and the last 5 years now. It's been about 5 years almost since the first event. And this was pre-metapsychosis, but it was a reading group for Ursula K. Le Guin's The Dispossessed. That was in December of 2015. And then after that, starting in January, we did the Gebser Ever-Present Origin reading group. That went from January to like, I think it was May maybe. And then that summer, 2016, is when we started Metapsychosis. And I've always felt that, like I've always... felt that we could give more attention to the things that we do, like that there's something about like the pace, that like the timing of things, that like, and I called myself Mad Rush, you know, so I'm totally to, you know, I blame no one but myself for this, but like I feel like there's sort of like a pace of the internet, you know, that we're sort of working against. Like there's this like temporality and transitoriness, like to the data that, you know, transacts the matrix of, you know, our common culture, that would be good to like sort of work against that. And instead of trying to do more, doing more with less, doing more with what we have, because like Bridget, you know, you've done a lot of writing, you've published a few books already, but we have barely given it any attention until Mary wrote that review. And I think that in the kind of, in general, but also in the particular climate, like what gets sort of like through is has to be given more attention. Like it has to, you have to come back to it. And like, as we've been doing, like, and I think this has been a profound practice with some of the Sri Aurobindo readings, really going slow, taking our time, looping back through the text, like multiple times, like doing those close readings. I don't mean that necessarily like with everything we publish, but just the idea that it's like, you don't just publish something and then it's done. Like you can publish something and then add to its value by having a conversation and sparking a conversation about it, and also getting it in front of the people who would appreciate it, because you know we've never really done, maybe since like the first year, like when Jeremy was doing it, like actual like marketing, like with strategy, like having thought about like, you know, where we would do that and how. I know we post things to Facebook and to Twitter when they come out, but if somebody were doing marketing, they would bring a whole nother approach to it. Like they would be trying to, you know, get really present it and get it to as many people who would appreciate it as possible. Like not necessarily like the targeted, type of marketing. And I don't mean by that, like doing surveillance capitalism and all that. Like, I just mean like, just really like finding the audience for a given piece and for a given author, like in like the way that it's done now, and in better ways, like in ethical ethical ways of doing it. You know what I mean? So anyway, I thought like just the ideas that have been popping through my head is like doing podcasts where we talk about things we've published, getting a mailing list, like getting newsletters going, and you know, if there are people like Eduardo who actually does internet marketing, and I have a background in internet marketing, getting a like people who want to do that, like a team, sort of a marketing team. Like we have an editorial team, we could have a marketing team. And then insofar as we're going to be selling books, possibly selling print editions, and you know, all that takes work, all the internet stuff takes work, we're going to need agreements to do that. And so some focus will need to come to like the business side or the administrative side of things. I can't do that all. So if we start thinking about, I guess, what's the bigger system, we would have an editorial team, we'd have a kind of marketing web promotional team, and sort of business, and then there's the technology. And setting like that up to move into the new year, or in the new year, I think could get us kind of get a foundation for the publishing that we're going to do. So Jeffrey's book, Brian's book, my book, and you know, whatever else comes through the community. So Eduardo and I were talking a little bit before about some, we were like brainstorming ideas for that. And I don't know, it's something we could, like, I'd love to hear what you all think about that in general. And then, you know, if you want to go further into it, we can, and we can also talk, you know, about other more immediate things like scheduling, like the second, and
that'll be a real brief discussion. I was thinking as I listened to you, because I remember going to a panel. This must have been during the Nebula conference, Jeffrey, because you went to that too, didn't you?
Yep.
There was a panel on self-publishing, and the moderator was great. They asked everyone there, what do you think is the most effective thing you've done for publicizing yourself, and what was something you did that wasn't and you would regret doing? But anyway, what I remember from that, I think, is that lots of people said a monthly email newsletter, like a mailing list, like you said, but sending out something that lands in people's inbox, not too often to annoy them, but just with like maybe your top, in our case, we could put the top articles, calls for submissions when we have them, things like that, is like not necessarily very, it takes some work, but not hugely labor intensive. And people seemed to think it was pretty effective for the sort of effort to effectiveness ratio was good on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were going to start doing publicity, that would be, my vote would be to start with something like that.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think it's also like I get some really great newsletters too. Like I don't get too many or accept too many, but like Brain Pickings, for example, Maria Popova, she always has like really good content material, like and sometimes it's relevant, sometimes it's not, but over time, like receiving that every week, and or I mean, I think monthly is also a fine frequency, or there could be like options as well, like if somebody wants a weekly digest, they can get that perhaps. But what's nice about her newsletter and some others that I've seen is like when there's like a personal curation, like when you get a sense of somebody's voice and they're like presenting the content, almost like putting it in a like narrative for you. The New York Times has been doing that actually with their newsletter. Like they kind of give you the news in this like narrative format.
Yeah, the Guardian's been doing it too.
Mm. Oh yeah, I Now we get to hear what everyone subscribes to. I get the Boston Review newsletter. that radical left-wing one. And theirs usually starts with a paragraph that just like summarizes all the articles that have, briefly summarizes the articles that have been coming out recently, but like words are highlighted in the paragraph. Like it, you can like, oh, that sounds interesting. And you click on it and it takes you to the article. Like, so that's that, yeah. So that involves like someone writing down a, it's kind of like the edit, what's it called? Letter from the editor, lots of message from the editor. That's mm-hmm. not the word, but lots of magazines open with a very brief editorial that often just summarizes what's in the rest of the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has that voice that you're talking about, but then it could be filled with links to the content itself.
Could we take turns doing that?
Yes, that would, because that's more work. So it shouldn't be the same person every time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if we committed to doing that, like saying, starting on a date, like when, give us like some ramp up time.
Yeah.
There's a plugin on the WordPress site called MailPoet, which lets you like write a newsletter in the system. It's not like right in WordPress, and you can drag in images or you can drag in links to articles that are on the site. And it's very user friendly. And then you know, you can schedule it to be sent to the list on a given date. But that would be great. I think that would be like one of like just a good basic like fundamental thing to do, because what's good about mailing lists too is that those are emails that you have. Like, so if somebody's opted into our mailing list, it's like they want to hear from us directly. And so until they unsubscribe, we can, you know, we have that direct link. Whereas like with social media, although it's good to have a following, perhaps like on Twitter or Facebook, those are all like intermediated, you know, by the company, the tech company. And so if they decide to just stop showing your stuff to your page, like Facebook did, and you know, maybe you post something and five people see it, you know, then unless you pay for you know, targeted placements in people's news feeds, which isn't unreasonable necessarily to do. Like, I don't personally want to pay Facebook. Like, I'd rather put it into other app, you know, other possibilities. Like, if we had an advertising budget, there's probably other ways we could use that money.
And I'm not convinced it actually is like cost effective. Like, I'm not convinced you get much bang for your buck with Facebook.
No.
Well, because what's the mind state of the person that's seeing that ad? Like, they're seeing like 1,000 other things like in the last 5 minutes, and there's not necessarily a receptivity, you know, to, if it's like a quick immediate gratification thing, like some awesome new pair of shoes that like is like has nanotechnology or like is the perfect molded customized fit, like whatever it is, like I think it's good for impulse kind of actions. But
not even, because I've put ads, I've done Facebook ads, and the way I have it is constructed. I have a very wide reach on the ones that I do, and it's both Facebook and Instagram, and I never pay more than $25. I will not go above that amount of money, and that usually covers like at least a week, 10 days, so it's not an unreasonable thing. And I've had hundreds and hundreds of people like the ads, and it, nothing else comes of it.
Yeah, I agree. I've done it too. I did it for my fashion business, and lots of people like the stuff, but nobody comes through to do anything more. So it's
hard to get
the follow through. And you can link it. You can link, you know, your ads to the your Google Analytics. You can see how many people come to your site. But will they do anything beyond that?
That's it.
Yeah, that's definitely in the question. Like, what's the quality of that traffic? What's the quality of the attention? And maybe if there were this is totally theoretical, there's no advertising budget, but in the future, like let's say there were, like where would it be well spent? And that's what I would ask, like where would there be a return on that investment? And I don't have the answer to that question, but
I notice ads for this type of thing is other literary journals newsletters. So I think, for example, I get the Malahat Review newsletter, and down the sidebar of it is ads for other people's literary journals. And that is like a way I found out about calls for submissions or contests that I could enter or so on. I guess it hasn't actually made me buy a subscription yet, but
well,
I do
books as well, right? Like you would see ads for books. So if Jeffrey's book is published, we could advertise it with some other literary magazines or reviews, right? Yeah.
And then you know your audience is already kind of like it's the right audience for that because they're already a subscriber to another literary journal, I think.
And it's cool to support them and to make start a relationship with all those journals and mailing list of like-minded people. That's that idea.
Yeah. Like our money, I think it's effective, and our money, advertising money, is then like supporting another literary journal too. So
yeah.
Good.
I like that idea a lot. Man, that to me is in keeping more with the ethos than making, you know, Mark Zuckerberg richer. But I think very likely would be a lot more effective because somebody reading a literary newsletter is already going to be in a more receptive state to an advertisement for a book. All right, I think that's a great idea.
I just wanted to come back to the newsletter idea. Basically what we're saying is we're now doing enough stuff to justify a small newsletter, right? Because you have to, if you have a newsletter, you have to feed it. You have to have stuff to put into it, right? So you need a minimum level of activity. And what we're saying is we've sort of put some of that into place now with the weekly publications. And then as we get into book publishing, there'll be a little bit more on that end as well.
I mean, the other thing is it doesn't have to all be new stuff either. What I kind of like about this is that each newsletter could maybe feature two new stories that came out that month, a call for submissions or something like that. And then like we could have a From the Archives feature that's sort of
right.
Like, dig something out from a few years ago in case you missed it. This was a cool article.
And even talk about the forums a little bit, perhaps, and not just metapsychosis. So.
Oh yeah, each newsletter could sort of advertise or feature a forum that people might be interested in joining.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A reading group?
Yeah.
Right.
The forums are a treasure. I think the potential those forums have is immense. It's like a mine, a gold mine.
Yeah.
But we have, there's gotta be a way to use those forums to mesh them with the content even more than it is now.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are definitely interested in the forums. I mean, I have to confess personally, I just haven't had time for any forums anywhere. So it's not a medicine thing, but it's I see that there's a lot, you know, that seems to be what is a lot of interest generated. And I think there's, yeah, cause that's where people sort of interact with each other, you know?
Yeah, I haven't been active there neither, but when I see them, I see the potential, like, wow, people are really putting time and energy and their thoughts and all the discussions are very interesting. It's a lot going on there. There's a lot going on there.
It's relatively small too, though. Like that's one thing, like I think, it's not, it's more than I can, or any one person I think can keep up with, but compared to a lot of other forums out there, it's pretty small.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the people who post tend to be pretty verbose. So there's, and I mean that with like very lovingly, like, but they, they don't hold back, you know? And so it's more of the deeper end of, I think, the pool. And I think that what we have with the forum, if we really looked at it as a tool, if we could kind of create the user experience in a way that people weren't overwhelmed by everything that's going on, and where if they could just start with one topic, one or two topics or discussions that they're particularly interested in. And then, and I've seen this on some other forums, so I know it's doable, but we kind of narrow it down so that you just get that thing, you can come back, you can take your time. I mean, that's one thing that people have expressed appreciation for, is that it's not too fast. You know, it's not like your thing, your post is going to get lost down at the bottom of the newsfeed within like 3 hours. So you, like, the kind of mood that is, like, the tone that is set could be a different temporality. It could be like refreshing compared to like the pace of Twitter, you know, and everything else. But it's still, but where I think it has to be more effective is in kind of cutting out cutting out the extraneous stuff, so that if somebody is new and they want to follow a discussion about sacred geometry, you know, or the divine feminine, like, or a particular god, like one particular goddess, right? Then they see that and they could sort of get into that. And then, you know, at a certain point, maybe they'll get introduced to other topics, or they'll start exploring on their own. But there isn't that overwhelm and there isn't that confusion. Like, that's one thing that's been a consistent, kind of feedback, is it's confusing, or it's overwhelming. And I think that there's a lot of really amazing content there, but it also needs to be sort of like harvested. It needs to be sort of like plucked out and like because it takes work to read through 40 posts to get to the one thing that like suddenly like blows your mind.
Not to speak of re-listening to 40, you know, discussions, each an hour and a half long, you know. It's like...
That's right. So there have to be like more friendly entry points, I guess, is what I'm saying. And and I could imagine doing that. It's just putting the focus on it, and some kind of people who want to do that and have like a sensitivity to user interface and to user experience, to, you know, making some concrete suggestions, like how can we change the interface to do that? Because I think it's totally doable.
Or we change subjects completely. I wanted to say that that idea just started the meeting with about going like the being the opposite of the internet, in the way of like the internet is all fast and then news. And the thing that metapsychosis has is like a slow pace where everything is thoroughly thought of, and you guys edit every piece very methodically. I think that idea should be like the core of the publicity of the advertising that we eventually do. Like, that idea is very powerful, and that will attract people that aren't interested in the fast pace of the internet that is also overwhelming, and it's not that interesting, right? Like, for some people, for the people that would be interested in the publication. So put a pin on that idea for when we have an advertising budget.
So slow food. I mean, not food, but
Exactly. So
there is that slow food movement, though. I think it came out of Italy. it, of course, it's just how people have always eaten. But it was, yeah, the idea that you should savor your, you know, savor.
So it's slow cultural spiritual food here.
This is reminding me, like we were talking about, like doing more with what we've already got out. One of the things we tossed around was doing interviews with some of the writers we've already published. So is that something I wanted to check in with you guys before I started actually like emailing any of the writers I worked with, but is that something I should, that we should start doing, like Susan Evans or Diana Thorson or people we've already put out, or who would be our top picks to have an interview with? For example,
I think Annie Blake. I've been starting to read her poetry, and it's really good. Like, she's a really good poet, and just that she dropped that whole book, I think, was really under remarked upon. So I think hearing more from her would be really interesting.
Cool. I would love. I'd be happy to. I mean, I didn't work with her, so maybe. Who was it who was working?
Mainly.
It was you, Bridget? So yeah. If you wanted to do it, but if you didn't have time, I'd be happy to set something up with her if you introduced us.
Maybe. Oh, sure. I'm happy to do that. Absolutely. Yeah.
And like options are, like the slightly more complicated thing is to do a recorded interview on Zoom, but the absolute easiest version is to email back and forth with questions. And then produce a written, like just do some minimal editing to make a written article out of it at the end. I can see kind of advantages to both.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's totally up to you or to the any editor how they'd want to do that. I've done both. And with the written, I would start to get into like adding and editing upon the written, upon what is it becomes a writing project, you know, basically. It's not just an interview. With the spoken, it could more of a just dialogue, and that could be easier in a certain way, if it's not going to be like hyper edited, you know, like you could just start the Zoom, have a few questions prepared, and more like conduct.
My goal would be like in either case to not edit it at all. Video, I'm not volunteering to do a ton of video editing.
Sure, but I mean just the beginning and end point, you know what I mean? Like just so that it's clean. Like we've kind of are sloppy about that a lot of times. Like we'll just let a video go with at the beginning with
We don't really edit video much, do we?
Almost nothing.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of times, though, to be fair, you probably don't necessarily have to. I mean, unless there's something that somebody says in there where you're like, okay, yeah, well, we need to take this out, you know. Strictly speaking, I think for the most part, yeah. I mean, you know, it would just be, you know, if there's something here and there that needs to be cut. I don't know. I mean, Marco, have you done that in the past? I mean, do you have the tools for that?
Yeah, it's just too time consuming, honestly. Like, there was a time when remember Ollie? I don't know if you remember Ollie, but he was just a pure video editor and also a writer and a poet and other things, but he was really fast. Like, you know, we would record a dialogue and he could chop it up and produce like excerpts from it and put music on it and titles and like make a relatively well-finished product within like a day.
What?
But I'm not going to do that.
What kind of software do you use?
I could use iMovie. There's ScreenFlow is another one on the Mac. It's
So Mary and I do this with our podcast, we use iMovie because I had Final Cut, which is the $2,000 package, but iMovie does 99% of what Final Cut does, and it's free, so or almost free, you know. So I gave up with Final Cut because iMovie does it all, you know.
I use iMovie and I also use Camtasia Studio. Those are the two things that I use when I do my YouTube video editing and things like that. You know, and editing that I do, I have to say, is very minimal. You know, it's mainly, but I'm doing live video, I tend to use iMovie because I think it works better. But I also have an old version of Camtasia too, which is crappy. It's like you're in the middle of rendering something and the whole thing just like freezes and says it's out of memory. So it's so you have to save the project, leave, go back in, start again. You know.
Okay, pain
in the neck.
Yeah, I mean, like tablet programs, I have found them almost work better. An iPad video editing program or audio editing program, like in some ways, like they're forced to be simpler and more user.
I've done that on the iPhone, iMovie on the iPhone, but it's anyway, it works for something
small.
That's really
a small
simple.
Screen.
It's
yeah.
Not, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So that's interviews you were saying, Matt, Mary.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I think
like
it's
yeah, either way.
Interesting to, I think once, if you've read a piece and you like it, you'd kind of like to know a little bit more about who wrote it. And so it's kind of interesting as a activity. And of course it promotes their work at the same time. So
give me a few days and then I'll contact you, Bridget, because I actually haven't read all of Annie Blake's book.
Oh, no, that's fine.
I haven't either, by the way. And
but I'll do it.
I didn't mean to suggest that you should interview her necessarily. Like you might have somebody, you know, I was just throwing out like a name of somebody I thought like would be interesting to interview.
Well, or one of us, or, you know, we could even do it like a conversation. You know, there could be a group of us too. I mean, you know, it can go either way. It can be one person who says, yeah, I want to be the person, or it could be a couple people, you know?
I do think it's more likely to get done if I'll just be the pragmatist here and say that things with one person are more likely to get done.
when there's one person as opposed to a group?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it depends. I mean, again, it all depends on... yeah, it depends on how busy the other person is that you're involved with. It was like when I did my dissertation and it was like, do you want a third reader? I'm like, no. Because I know the person who wanted to be my third reader, I wouldn't hear from him for about 3 years. So yeah, no, I understand.
Okay.
So so I guess concretely, you're offering to follow up with Annie Blake and interview her? Mary?
Yeah, well, I could read her stuff first, and then maybe I could let Bridget know, and Bridget could send an email with me copied in to Annie saying that we're interested in doing this, and like that could get things rolling.
Yeah, she is such a sweet person, and she's very easygoing, and I'm sure she'd be delighted. So, okay. Yeah.
Cool. All right, I'll let you know when I've read the book. that's okay, how.
No problem. Whenever you're ready, I'm good. I'm projectless right now. So other than, well, doing more podcasts for next year and stuff like that, but in terms of writing and stuff, so I'm actually a little more open than usual. So
nice.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm. I want to read along too. And you know, if just so I can follow the conversation and we can talk about it. We can talk about the poems in future meeting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean that
as you mentioned Maya, and it would be I'd be interested to hear more about her background at some point. I mean, we haven't actually published it yet, but I just mentioned it as a follow through would be interesting.
Well, it'd be cool to get it ready ahead of time so that when it was published you could release it with this kind of promotional material. Would be like good planning.
For Maya, you're saying? Yeah. Specific?
Yeah. All
right. Yeah. So I have an idea for this, and I'm going to throw it out and see what happens with it. But so her book, you know, I spent probably a couple months reading it and kind of off and on and a lot of other things going on. But like, so I don't know how good a reader I was the first time around. Let me just say, like, I think that like there's something like when you really immerse in a book and read it like over a shorter period of time, like you get, you know, like all the connections more clearly, and the picture may form more vividly, like in your mind. And there were things about the book that I felt like almost that I didn't have like a clear enough immersion in it. Like I didn't have a clear enough like sense of what's happening, but clearly there is a story and there are characters and there are like, there's meaning. Like I found the book meaningful and interesting. And like, I was attracted to kind of the world that she's painting and like the questions that she's asking through the book, because it's set in the future in a kind of dystopian like time when there's water shortages, when like a couple of companies have taken over water production, and there's like this sort of underground movement of people who are resisting the like techno like surveillance kind of like dystopian state that has emerged. The United States has broken up. There's been like geopolitical shifts, and there's a group of people who kind of have this underground society, but what ties them in common is that they're dreaming, and they're receiving these kind of dream messages from an entity who they call Ariadne, which happens to be Maya's handle
yeah.
conversation. So now in the wider society, like dreaming is seen as like threatening, and people take anti-REM drugs to not dream. But those who do dream have this kind of like connection, and somehow this kind of idea emerges called like this action, this idea to perform an action emerges. This is some of the things that are fuzzy for me, but like how exactly that happened. It seemed to have been like communicated to the group, and then they meet and they're friends, like, and there's a love story at the center of it too. So there's a really interesting characterization, really, I think, interesting portraits of different kind of people. One of the characters is blind. And so like the experience of the events from his point of view is also like an important part of the book. But what is cool is that the dreaming is this part of it. And dreaming has been a subject of conversation on Infinite Conversations. John Davis and Doug Duff have done a number of sessions on it, recorded sessions. John always shares his dreams, and they're very elaborate and interesting. I've had Karina Bush, who's somebody I did an interview with. She mentioned to me that she's been having many like intense dreams lately, and she's been recording them and writing them down. I have not been dreaming very much, but like I want to be dreaming. Like I feel like there's an attractor there for me. And I wonder if there could be a kind of like reading group that like goes into Maya's text and sort of like reads it like in a participatory way, where we're not just like reading the book and trying to make sense of it. We are doing that, and the book is serving as a kind of a starting point and a context, like a mirror, like image, but actually the group becomes a laboratory for people sharing their dreams and for practicing a kind of like social dreaming. Mm-hmm. And so we're following the fiction, but also like participating in like the, like adding to it. Like, and then I would reread the book and participate in that, and hopefully it'll spark more dreams in me. and then we could work through the book and give like our interpretations of it, like give our feedback as well to Maya. But it would be kind of like, we wouldn't be publishing it so much as like we'd be publishing it for the group, and then the group would process it and have their process record something, and then that would be what we're adding to the work as a whole. Wherever the book lands, like we bring it some, like we add something to it. Like it's what we make of it, essentially. You know, if that's just an idea that came to me in that. I don't want to like totally commit to it, because I get ideas like that, and then, you know, like I want to think about like what would actually go into it. Like it would take time to organize. We'd have to schedule a time for it. There'd have to be a group that wants to do it, that's attracted to that. And as I think about next year, it's to me like a potential that maybe it's a good idea.
I really like that. I'd be willing to take a lead on that if you wanted somebody to do that. You know?
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I would certainly participate and you know, help.
I've been dreaming more. I think it's part of slowing down post-retirement is I'm now remembering my dreams more than I was. Not sure I want to share all my dreams.
There might be dreams that are particularly relevant, right? We may be able to find that like common plane and like come reenact in a way the book, like the enaction. This would be a kind of action.
Dreaming experiments. There you go.
Yeah. Actually, that reminds me, Bridget, when you came for the religious studies conference, one of the papers just before yours was about dreaming.
And yeah, Tony Vocally, who actually weirdly read my master's thesis and commented on it. But he's the guy who that's his whole field is dreaming.
It was about like a persecuted, I think like 16th or 17th century, like French nun or something who
had these kind of prophetic dreams, if mm-hmm. what I remember. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of visioning exercise as well as a dreaming exercise, right? And maybe voice can also, because of her text is beautifully written. So we could even read aloud.
There are skits in it too. There's like play within a play kind of thing. There's a whole Shakespearean kind of thread that gets woven through. A Midsummer Night's Dream is comes up again. Some of the characters like reenact Shakespearean like, you know, episodes. It definitely would lend itself to that.
That book sounds cool.
Yeah, it is actually. It's called See You in Our Dreams.
And it's very slow. I mean, but that's an advantage, not a disadvantage, right? I mean, I think some of your difficulties with the text, it's partly because it's slow, right? So if you break off and go away and come back, you know, I mean, it's hard to hold all those threads in your mind because it's slow, because you have to break off, is what I'm getting at.
And I think the bits of it that you read give you enough to work with. You don't need to keep going. Like you can linger with the sections. So those would lend themselves to, like, I think the group going somewhere.
Would Maya be, would she be interested? Because she's been hesitant to participate in the video work.
I think she would be, I've talked with her a number of times, and I think she'd be interested in audio if we could do that. And it would tie in actually with the text because there's a blind character. So giving like special attention to the audio, I think would be interesting. We could make it intent, like on purpose, actually. It would be a feature, not a bug. So perhaps some mix, perhaps like she joins us not every time or something, or I don't know what she would want to do.
That might be the place to start, actually, is just like float the idea to her and see what she might like to do, you know?
Okay. I'll follow up with her then. And next time we meet, we could follow up on this idea with her input. Just a side note, this topic of orality and orality versus the visual word, I think, is an interesting one. And I know it was covered in the last Consciously Evolving Language session, which I listened to and I would like to reply to in the appropriate context. But I think like that being kind of a meta level kind of question is looking at the differences, comparing and contrasting, like our experience as readers, our experience as listeners, and our experience as dreamers would be, I think, an interesting axis of, you know, inquiry. Okay. So that was that.
We could, this is such a minor agenda item, but we may as well do it now. I think the second, like I mentioned, I think the second is ready to go and all that's left is to pick a date. Does anyone have any feelings about?
as soon as possible, maybe next week.
The last thing to do.
I loved it. I think it's a gorgeous piece.
Yeah, I think it's.
But I actually, although I would have accepted it when it came in, I just think the rewrite has substantially made it stronger. So So
it feels smooth to me now. Like I read through it and it doesn't trip me up anywhere. So
it does seem to me that I almost have this sense that it almost doesn't matter what revisions you do as a writer. It just matters that you do revisions in each one. this is reminding me of another problem I'm having, which is that I tried to get into the Metapsychosis website today with my password and it's not working anymore.
Oh no. Did you try resetting your password?
That's a good idea and I will just do that. But that means that just for the moment I can't look at the calendar, so I won't be able to put it on. But,
okay.
Oh, I'm in. Never mind. Dashboard. Okay. I just thought I'd bring up our publishing calendar dashboard. Oh, Weekend Getaway was up. That's cool. That kind of
We did that 2 weeks ago, I think. Yes.
Yeah, we did that before we did Andrea's poems, I think.
Cool. Yeah. Nice feature image for it.
Thank you. I found that one.
What days of the week do we usually publish again?
Monday and Wednesday, but not absolutely fixed in stone. Could be Friday, for instance. Right. We could do Friday this week.
Okay, let's see. I think I've got some time tomorrow, and if I can pull everything together with a feature image and everything, then I'll put it out.
Do it on Friday, if not Monday next week.
I did make one or two punctuation changes on the document, so I will just wait. That might be a limiting step because I'll wait for Karen to tell me that she doesn't mind that I moved her M dash. I just couldn't help myself.
It could annoy some of us.
You want to set it for next Wednesday and then just give yourself some time to sort that out.
Yeah, there's not a rush. I think middle of next week would be fine.
Well, it'll probably end up being either Monday or Wednesday next week. That's what I think. So, but I can start because getting the feature image and setting the categories and stuff always takes longer than you think. So I'll get it. I'll start getting it ready to go.
You get the right banner size.
So my priorities were still to finish Maya's book, which I am working on. So I will push through because I think, especially if we're going to do an initiative with it, I think it would be good to push through it.
And my priorities actually, so I, Jeffrey, on the UFO piece, I realized something, which is that there was an initial submission. And then Ed had made some comments that I conveyed to the author, and they made a few edits, and I posted the revision directly onto the submission page on Metapsychosis. You, I think, commented on the older version. Okay. So there are some places that basically I need to do a merge of your comments. I mean, I'm going to emerge of the revisions that the author made into the document as your comments. And then I'm simultaneously adding my comments. And I'm also working on some like footnote-y kind of like suggestions for like how to address what you, point out.
Because I did feel like if it was going to go out to the author, I would, go back in and see if I could fine tune some of the things I said so that they were clear for the author. But you know, if you're doing that already, so I don't want to double up on your work.
Well, I'll get it back to you. So I'll do my part. That's good. I'll merge things in, and then you can do a final review of your own comments.
That's good.
But it'll probably eliminate.
I would feel happier.
Things like there was a few things that you pointed out that he had actually already addressed.
Okay.
So I'll correct for those. Yeah. I just was able to I found a program that'll let you do a side-by-side comparison of any two documents. And so it'll show you which words are changed between, between nice. Versions of a text. Very useful. Yeah. So that is work I'd like to do. I just haven't, I'm just going to need a few days to spend an afternoon, really sifting through the text. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is just the manual labor of editing.
Well, I'm trying to, I have finished the rewrite for Plenum. So I'm going to submit the revised manuscript to you this week.
Okay.
By Friday. So. Okay. I've just got a few things to look at it now. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
I have a couple of things too that I'm almost ready to submit. I have a piece that I wrote in 2012 that I think maybe it has its time is now. And another one that a poem. This first piece is a short story, kind of a prose poem. And the other one is a poem. But I'm working with Karina on a video of it and recording, and I want to have that done first, actually. So that'll come whenever, that will take more of its time, but the short prose piece I think I'd like to submit before the end of the year, and it could probably use editing, so we'll see what you think. And if it's good or we can get it into a good state, we can potentially publish it before the end of the year. So if the second is next week, maybe the week after that, or maybe
right.
the
week. Yeah.
Okay. I guess it's been an hour. Time seems to be going slower today. Is that just me?
Definitely slower.
Today's actually been a little faster, but generally speaking, yeah, it's been a bit slower.
Okay.
A few things that just wander across my mind is if we're deciding on the newsletter, we could pin down when we're gonna start it and who's gonna do the first one. And vaguely, this is probably not for deciding today, but do we want to think about when next year's submission window is?
Yeah, I think so.
Even if it's
for
not-
for metapsychosis, yeah.
Yeah, even if it's not for another 6 months, it would be nice to have thought to start thinking about it.
And there are also a couple of pieces left over from the, so there's the Thorsten resubmission.
Mm-hmm.
To look at. It's a major piece, so it needs a slow look as opposed to a fast look. But
okay. I didn't realize it had been resubmitted. So do you need another reader on it?
It's not resubmitted, it's the first, but it's the one I asked her if she had some more stuff, and she sent me this full manuscript with lots and lots of things in it. So I really haven't had a chance to go through it more than a very superficial look, but it looked reasonably interesting. So
yeah, it did. That was the one I had the comment about. I'm curious because the setting is very clearly not European, but all of the mythology, or European or Western or whatever, Egypt and Greece and stuff, but all of the mythology is. And so that was not a criticism, but a curiosity about how she sees those.
We could certainly ask her about that too.
I would be really interested.
And of course the photos, which were also quite strong, mm-hmm. I thought, in what she submitted. So
cool.
If you'd like to pick that up as a second reader, Mary, I think that would be very useful.
Well, I mean, I have. So are you staying? You're still at the point of contact. I think that was my first. That's my first comment. Yeah. I think I did read a chunk of it, and I wouldn't be ready to do like a detailed edit of it if there was before we'd had broader discussions.
Okay.
If that makes sense, just in case anything changed. I'm not going to go through and look for commas if there's any sense of revisions on the horizon.
Just to your question about timing, my personal preference on that would be like after the spring, because I think, at least for me, January, February, March, I'll probably mainly be focused on Brian and Jeffrey's books. Yeah. So I wouldn't want to be doing too much other reading.
There's something nice about like making it an almost annual thing. Wasn't the last one in August?
Yeah.
Maybe if we keep that sort of roughly in our mind as a future plan, that would be.
I don't mind that. And to me, also, like I'm feeling more of a pull toward like working with what we already have. I feel like there's a lot that we haven't finished in a sense, like, or I haven't absorbed even. So I want to revisit what we've done, and I haven't read Thorsten's work, for example, but I started and I realized it was interesting. I'd want to give some time to it, and I just haven't yet. So that, I think, too, belongs to slowing down and giving things more time. Duvray.
Okay. So what about the newsletter question though? Because that was the other question about when we might want to start that. I mean, and when the first time would be to do that.
Well, if we were going to do that once a month, which is the kind of rhythm you were talking about, I think, Mary.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one, we might all look at coming up with a small piece that would feed a newsletter. And we would have those pieces all ready to go so that they could be slotted into several months, you know, so we would be have some preparation ahead of time is what I'm getting at. So,
So do we want to look at starting something like that late January or into February? Give everybody some time to put something together?
Yeah, that sounds good.
I like that too.
Okay.
Is there a list of mails already, like
mailing list,
database with people that will receive that first newsletter letter?
There are it's on the site too, maybe in a future meeting I could introduce you to the list and to the mailing list software. It's fairly easy, but there's at least 500 people on that list. I think it may be
a little more than
that. And I think also there are ways to grow a list that, you know, we could once you get it going, then you can share about the list. Like we can post it to Facebook, Twitter, other, you know, literary social venues. Like we can promote the list more. And perhaps like in some way it's like, it's kind of, here's an idea. Like we could use the language of subscription. Like you could subscribe to Metapsychosis and get that. This is just an idea that's popping into my head right now. So may not be that great, but like the concept of subscription, it doesn't have to mean that you pay for it necessarily. Like I think an email newsletter is usually free and should be free, but if you subscribe and like the base thing you get is you get the monthly newsletter, then we can add to it later, like as there are other potential features that come up. Maybe like there's then a subscription that involves like the reading groups or involves like, you know, some other you know, other kinds of perks. But that could be like we start a subscription and the thing you get at first is the newsletter. So, and I'd be happy to write the first one, okay, the intro, but actually, but if anybody thinks that they would be better at it, which is very possible, then I would welcome you to state that, because I don't have, feel like I have to write the first one. I'm just in the
I think as long as we can have come to some kind of agreement on what the content is going to be, you know what I mean? Because I think that's it too. Because like right now we're kind of winding down on new submissions right now, because we were having a point where we were doing, you know, submissions every single week. And now, like you said, we're slowing down, kind of reflecting more on what we have. So it would be a question of, okay, what exactly are we going to, what's exactly the content going to be for this first newsletter? Because then after that, then I think it shouldn't be as difficult of a matter to summarize or to write that kind of initial piece saying, yeah, this is what's going on.
Yeah, you know? To pull it together.
Right. So I was thinking maybe if we're looking at late January, like maybe if we want to see what we want to come up with, the GIST still gives us like a couple of meetings that maybe by the second meeting in January, if we figure out where we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to contribute?
I also think, Marco, I remember what we did for the call for submissions. You wrote a draft and then we commented it, and you wrote, you, what was actually went up was fairly heavily edited from our comments. So I think we might do something, you know, could write a draft, but we'll roll up our sleeves and get in.
That sounds good to me. I mean, yeah. If we can collaboratively edit it, but have some kind of accountability, like, so like maybe the first issue, I'm the lead editor pulling the things together, and next time it's Mary or Bridget or whoever. Then, but we have a process in place and more or less like know what are the pieces that need to be brought together. Like, for example, the From the Archives, if that was a regular feature, then all we need is somebody to provide, like to nominate a piece for the archive section and maybe write a little blurb about it. And like, this is why we think it's worth, you know, your time. I like if we're doing any reading groups, some kind of update from the group, for example, could be a feature. And then anything that's new on the site, anything that's newly published, including the podcasts that are published.
Some of those reading groups have been going on for a long time and are going to go on for a long time. Savatry, for instance, is not even halfway through yet, and we've been at it a year and a half. So, yeah.
And I mean, I think we're appropriate also if they're like, we can invite people to things and say, well, if you want to participate in the reading, the dreaming group, for example, that would be, it would be announced in the newsletter. So if we publish it at the end of January, beginning of February, and we have kind of, we've coagulated some of the offerings for next year, then those could be the part of the features, the upcoming events, upcoming groups, the concrete ways people can get involved and participate.
Thanks.
Yeah. And it's just a matter of, sorry, I had a thought and now I'm like, but I was just thinking that, there's so many different pieces and components, and some things could be regular things, you know, but because it sounds like we can come up with what I actually remember I was going to say. Maybe what we can do is we can maybe start a thread on like the E-Zone where we can kind of talk about, you know, maybe these are the pieces that we think need to be there, and probably between us all thinking about it and taking some time and, you know, over the next couple of weeks, we could say, well, you know, what about this? Or that sounds good. That doesn't sound good, you know, and then maybe come up with something.
That could be a thread that just kind of continually exists, so that whoever's writing the news, if you have ideas to go in the newsletter for that month, you put it there. And the editor in charge, their job is actually just to go to that and synthesize it into the newsletter. Like it's, so if anyone has news that they think should be in it, they just go drop a line.
Yeah. And it could start out with kind of a sense of like, these are the things we want to include. And then, yeah. And then we can start saying, yeah, put this in, or yeah, put this in, or this is the pieces I nominate, you know, or whatever, to go in there. And then, yeah. And then
that may actually,
sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
That may actually, because we've been talking about widening the editorial circle. So Eduardo is here today, and not everybody wants to be doing the heavy lifting of the editing. But if there was a new, you know, there might be, we may be able to get somebody who'd be interested in contributing to the newsletter, but not to the editorial process of at the other levels. So possibly we could bring in some other blood for that kind of work.
I could see, for example, one of the participants in a cafe, like the Consciously Evolving Language, or when Ed organized the reading group on The Idea of the World by Bernardo Kastrup, that they might write a summary of what the group did, what they discussed, and then point to the discussions that they had. So that could make it into the newsletter, and then it would, you know, draw attention to the actual videos and the book that was discussed. But that person, in effect, is a contributing editor. So Ed, in that case, would be like a contributing editor. Maybe Lisa would write something up based on the language sessions we've done.
Yeah, because I think if certain people are the ones who are the key people involved in these various groups or cafes or you know, reading groups, whatever, that they would be the ones who would be in the best position to, even if they just write something short that can, with links that can be pointed to, then that can just be added to that thread, to that content, and, you know, can be, like you said, be synthesized on a monthly basis. Aggregated, is that the word?
Aggregated.
Yeah. Like we're an RSS feed. Do people use those anymore? I don't know. I remember those days.
Okay.
Podcast is an RSS feed, basically. All podcasts are. So the technology is still in use.
I use an RSS feeder too, so you're right.
Yeah. I wanted to say that I think it should be free, because we were talking, the idea first came up with like a promotional tool, the newsletter. So maybe we could try to get new people through the newsletter, or people that are already interested in the publication, interested in other things that the Cosmos network is doing. But if we put a price from the get-go, maybe it would not work as a promotional tool. So I think at first it should be, we would try to get people subscribing to the mailing list, like the most people we can get. Like it should be free at first, at least.
I agree. I think the email can be one of those things. Like you said, we already have a list, but it can be one of those things like, you know, like there's always a form, like you can subscribe, put your email in, and then, you know, you can be updated monthly on what's going on. And I mean, certainly at least to start off with, I mean, it's more of a, use it in more of a promotional tool. And then when we get into the whole subscription thing, deciding where that fits in, you know?
Yeah.
By the way, Mark, are you still funding Cosmos out of your pocket, more or less? Or I mean, I know
I just haven't gotten around to doing the bookkeeping. That's the problem.
I know I contribute a little bit, but I don't think
it's... There's definitely a little bit coming in. I think what I would like to do, I'd like to do some bookkeeping and kind of sort of like show all the numbers and like where is it going and what's coming in, and then it'd be good on a cooperative level, if there was some kind of like treasury, if not a treasurer, a sort of treasury function, an accounting bookkeeping function. I think we're going to need that. And maybe we can hire a bookkeeper. There isn't probably enough money to hire a bookkeeper to just take care of, like, for example, we'll sell books and you'll get a royalty check, Jeffrey. And, we need to account for how that exactly happens. So I think there has to be a process of transition from myself funding and, sort of the black box of that process to one where it's more of an open accounting system. And then that, I think, also enables this other piece of the equation, which actually Eduardo and I were talking about before, which is fundraising, being able to pay for some things that are needed for publishing and websites and so forth.
Well, there should be a way to get some funds coming in from, there has to be a way to do that.
Oh, there is money out there, and there's people that want to fund this. We're just not talking to them.
Yeah, I know.
We're not giving them a path. But Eduardo had a really good idea, I thought, and maybe to circle back to it. You know, like it's one thing to do a crowdfunding campaign. It's a big effort to do that. It's another thing to speak to individual donors who maybe are higher amount donors and interest them in your project. But another possibility is to do a kind of smaller funding project, like instead of funding the whole thing, a book, or a piece of media where there's a concrete outcome that comes from it, and it's a smaller dollar amount. So we could do, for example, with your book, Jeffrey, or with Brian's, a kind of campaign where we are proposing to launch this series of books and this publishing imprint, and we want to put some money into the design, the production of the book, and the promotion of it, and we raise a modest amount, something that we are pretty confident that we can get, but it's a stepping stone towards being able to do the same for other projects and for the initiative as a whole. I thought that that was wise, because to me it's daunting to do, although it feels like the thing that ultimately we should do or should be done, it's daunting to take on a big crowdfunding type project, and it there's so many things that you have to promise, but with one project like a book, there's a really concrete outcome, and anybody who's funding it at the end of it gets a book, so that they really get something out of it, and they kind of become like the the equity in the project from the outset. So I don't know if you want to elaborate on what you were thinking.
It's leveraging the work that we're already planning to do anyway, so it makes good sense from a management perspective.
And to train for the real thing, like a training session. We start with one book, then we do another book, and that way we would test the waters to see. Well, we don't have like a real experience, so this would be like the first, and then the second, the third, and when we feel confident, do the big one. But we are not confident yet, so this would be a confidence boost if we can pull it off, which I think we can, definitely can. Definitely.
Great. I like this plan.
So maybe then, to come around to another topic, I talked about alternating these meetings between print and web. And maybe what we could do is the next meeting, or depending on when we want to start doing this, we could always touch on, if we need to schedule something or whatnot. But as far as the focus of the meeting, we could turn to print and start thinking about what's our roadmap for publishing Plenum and Brian's work and whatever else is going to come through from the collective. And what are the things we'd need to do? I think, like, I'm committed to publishing the books no matter what, right? So, but you guys can save me from, you know, all like taking that all on by myself and with Kayla by saying, all right, like, let's see if we can set up more of a framework around that so that we're kind of building the mechanism for not just this one book and not just like Marco doing it, but more like, how is this going to happen as a, like, as a, you know, ongoing enterprise. And to me, that also builds, it builds promotion. Like it builds awareness of the fact that the book is being published, because, you know, and we're going to be able to maybe release excerpts from it, or, you know, talks with the author, artwork in the Jeffrey's case. Even Brian actually has a lot of artwork.
Also have the fashion show and the augmented reality stuff. All that's coming together.
Hey. Yeah. So, and I mean, you're already raising money for that stuff, right, Jeffrey's? So,
well, it's going to be out of my pocket, but.
Okay. Well, then that, I mean, that could be some of like a stretch goal, like, right? We could say X amount is for the core publishing expenses. And, you know, beyond that, you'll be supporting a fashion show and, you know, holographic, you know, reenactment or whatever, whatever goes along with it.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good. I mean, if we're talking about it in terms of logistics or scheduling, I mean, I think the idea of like the second meeting of the month to deal with the print, however extensively we need to deal with that, is good. And it's probably good to hammer out some logistics of funding and then the exact actual process, because it's, you know, is it going to be something that, I mean, obviously there's the setup of the book and there's all that kind of stuff, but then how are you going to distribute it? Are you going to use somebody like Ingram? Are you going to, you know, like, what's going to be the mechanism for distributing your imprint and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm happy to help out with a lot of that stuff because I have some experience with it. So, sure. You know, I'm not like, you know, I'm not a major expert, but I can, you know, I have some experience. So, I can tell you what doesn't work. So I can tell you where I failed and spent hours doing it.
The advantage of working with a co-op and other people, right? So
you're right. Well, even just doing it by myself, because Cathonia Books I do entirely by myself and I fund it entirely by myself. And I've made a little money off of it. I haven't made huge amounts, but you know, it's but yeah, but there's just certain things that, depending on how you're planning on doing it, that you just definitely need to do and not do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, I mean, I think that would be, you want to start by, I mean, certainly there's the fundraising aspect of it, and then there's the technical aspect of it. And I think once you have that in place, and then of course, once you have whatever, like obviously we have, you know, Jeffrey's book, we have Brian's book, but then whatever else you want to do with that in the future, what are your guidelines? You know, how do you want to promote that? You know, where do you want to have calls for submissions for that sort of a thing, and so on and so forth. So there's all the different pieces that you want to put together. So it's probably good to devote at least a little bit of time to that. Once a month to talk about it.
Good. Are we having a second one? So 2 weeks from now is the 23rd of December. what's everyone?
Kind of a hard day.
I totally screwed up the pre-Thanksgiving one, pre-American Thanksgiving, I'll add. You know, so, I mean,
I'm not saying I'll necessarily be busy. I will hopefully be with my parents, who in a normal year have an insane schedule of entertaining over the Christmas holidays, but they will be prevented from doing that. So.
Yeah.
No, I agree. 23rd, I'm likely to be at home just like every other day. So.
Yeah, me too. No trips out, no meeting up with friends. We're all staying away from each other, you know?
Yeah,
I'll be around. I would love nothing more than to talk about publishing on the 23rd.
Yeah. talk about our Christmas plans. You know, it's all good.
Yeah. That would be a great Christmas present for me.
Seeing all, seeing all these great people. Yeah.
Good. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Yeah, let's do the same thing, and we can make that sort of the focus is the print side of it. Give some thoughts. In the meantime, we can get that forum thing going about the newsletter, and then you know maybe we'll have that to talk about too.
Perfect. Okay. That feels complete to me.
Yeah,
we're at our 90-minute point, so.
Just about, yep.
About lots done.
Yeah, it always feels, like you said, always feels good when we get stuff done, you know?
You guys are great. I missed you. Yeah, this was really fun.
Yeah, I agree.
It's good to see you. Back.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, thank let's talk again, Eduardo, too.
Of course.
All right. Cool.
All right.
Well, then, cool meeting, guys.
So safe travels, Mary.
If it happens, thanks. Yeah.
Cross for you there. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Stay safe, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.